This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. The ERA was one of the most hotly debated political issues of the 1970s. At that time, it was not, however, a new idea. In fact, advocates of women's rights had been working to get Congress to consider the ERA since the 1920s. It was introduced in every session of Congress from 1923 until 1970. Finally, it was adopted and it was sent on to the states. Congress set a 7-year time limit for the ratification process, and by the time the deadline arrived in 1979, 35 states had indeed ratified the ERA. 38 were needed. There was an extension of that deadline. The supporters failed to get any more states to ratify, and so it died. However, in the minds of many, it's not dead. In fact, supporters of the ERA have never really given up. It's been reintroduced in every session of Congress now since 1982, including the current session. It was introduced back in the spring with a new name, but essentially it's the same idea. And there are people who believe that, in fact, the ERA is not dead and that there is a real possibility that it could pass, although there are a lot of different ideas about what it would take to pass. In this part of the show, we'll talk about the ERA and review its status, and we have two guests with us, joining us both by telephone. Linda Wharton is an associate professor of political science at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, where she teaches courses in constitutional law, civil liberties, women and the law, and public education in the law. Before going to Stockton, she served as director of the Gender Equity and Education Legal Clinic at Rutgers Camden School of Law. She's also taught courses in sex discrimination law and advanced appellate advocacy at the University of Pennsylvania School of Law. Also joining us is Roberta Francis. She was, from 1999 until 2005, chair of the ERA Task Force of the National Council of Women's Organizations, and she has been involved in working for ERA ratification now for 3 decades. And she also established and maintains a website that you might take a look at if you're interested in finding out more about this issue, and that is www.equalrightsamendment.org. They, as I say, they're both joining us by telephone, and as we talk, questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome. We encourage people to be involved in the conversation, ask questions, make comments. The only thing we ask of callers is that people are as brief as they can be, and we ask that so that we can get in as many different callers as possible and keep our conversation moving along. But, of course, listeners are welcome to join in. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you're welcome to call. Well, Ms. Francis, hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And Professor Wharton.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for giving us some of your time. We certainly appreciate it. I know it's a little difficult here sometimes when we have two guests on the phone this way. So we try to make the show conversational. So if one of you is talking and the other would like to add on your comments, do go ahead. Don't wait for an invitation from me.
Very good.
Well, basically, I guess that the place to start for anyone who's not sure what it is we're talking about, we should get a basic definition of the Equal Rights Amendment. Maybe I'll start with Ms. Francis. What is the ERA?
Well, first of all, I commend you on that summary. I wish we could put that on every radio station going around the country because you did a very good job in summarizing the legislative history there. What I like to do first is just quote all 52 words of it because it's a very short amendment stating a principle. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. There are two other clauses that just have to do with the fact that Congress will have the power to enforce it and also that it would take effect two years after the date of ratification.
Mm-hmm.
But the total of those three sections is 52 words. So I think what's key, of course, is equality of rights under the law should not be denied or abridged on account of sex. And what it means is precisely what it says, that we have a constitution that while it's written, was written from the beginning without saying only men have certain rights, only white males of certain levels of property have these rights, that's how it was implemented. And so it has taken a lot of struggle, civil rights struggle, and so on, to get the Constitution to apply as broadly as it does now, but it still does not apply on the basis of male-female without a struggle when there is a dispute about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just, I'm sure that there are many different things here that we'll talk about, but let me turn to Professor Wharton, as she does teach constitutional law, and ask this question, because I know that there are people who would make the argument that we don't need the Equal Rights Amendment because the existing amendments to the Constitution address this issue. And I suppose the big thing, the one that they will point to, is the 14th Amendment, which is one of those that was passed after the Civil War. No doubt what they were thinking of was African Americans. But basically what it says is that no state shall deny any person their equal protection of the law, essentially. So, and I think that there would be some people who would say, well, it says any person, so that should cover anybody, no matter what their racial, ethnic background is or what their sex is. In what way would women be better protected, I suppose? Maybe that's a way to ask the question. In what way would they get greater protection under the law if the ERA became part of the Constitution, okay, above and beyond what the 14th Amendment says?
Okay, well, your question is an excellent one. Let me just back up and explain that the 19th Amendment, which prohibits sex discrimination in voting, mm-hmm, is the only provision in the United States Constitution that explicitly addresses women's equality. You are correct that the Supreme Court has turned to the Equal Protection Clause, and actually another provision of the 14th Amendment, also the Due Process Clause, to provide some protection against sex discrimination. However, because sex discrimination and women's equality is not explicitly protected in our Constitution, the protection under both the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause has been limited.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'll just insert kind of by way of footnote. The United States, it's sort of mind-blowing that the United States does not have that protection in our Constitution. 27 other countries, including Rwanda, Afghanistan, Algeria, China, have that protection explicitly in the Constitution. And in several instances, we, the United States, were the advocates of that protection.
Yeah, not to interrupt, but in Japan after World War II, we essentially wrote the Japanese Constitution, as I understand it, or, you know, oversaw it strictly. And there was a woman on the U.S. team who insisted that equality on the basis of sex be in the Japanese Constitution, where it is, but we still don't have it.
Well, for, you know,
and let me get back to
yes,
you.
Yes,
I didn't really finish my answer, which, you know, it is correct that there is protection that flows from the Equal Protection Clause when sex discrimination occurs. But the courts have failed to hold sex discrimination to the same level of review under the 14th Amendment as is applied, for example, to race discrimination. And that means that there are many discriminatory practices, barring women from certain military jobs, establishing boys-only public classrooms, certain discrimination in insurance. Those kinds of things continue, and they have been, are still legal because we don't have that high level of protection in our Constitution for sex-based discrimination, because the words are not there.
And you would argue that I'm sure that in those particular cases, those battles might yet have to be fought. This might be a matter of having a woman having to go to court over these issues, but it sounds as if what you're saying is that she would have a better sort of foundation to stand on, you know, metaphorically speaking, if there were an amendment that said specifically not just all people have equal rights, but that you cannot deny a person their rights based on sex.
Yes, if we had an ERA, the Supreme Court, when there were a challenge to sex, a sex discriminatory rule or policy, it would put the burden on government to come forward and justify that difference in treatment with a very high showing. You know, the same kind of showing that's required when there is race discrimination. And that test, and the legal terminology, I don't want to get too heavily into legal terminology, but it's called strict scrutiny.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean that there can never be discriminations based on race or sex, but it puts a very high burden on government to justify them.
And more than that, I think, not more than that, that's, you know, that's about as much as you, you know, as high a reason as we can have. But in addition to that, the ERA in the Constitution would also send a very strong message to potential offenders, people who would want to pass a law that did differentiate on the basis of sex inequitably, or, you know, who would, as we've seen recently, pay women differently from men and so on. And the message would be there's zero legal tolerance for sex discrimination under the Constitution. So it would really head off a lot of circumstances in the future that otherwise would have to be fought one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Mikulski, a senator from Maryland, back during the campaign, said that without the ERA, it's as though Lincoln had not issued the Emancipation Proclamation, but just said, well, let's free the slaves plantation by plantation. And so at this point, we have to fight case by case without the benefit of that foundation, as you said, of the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yes, case by case, and also we are dependent on statutes passed by the Congress, and we have many of them, the Equal Pay Act, Title IX, which prohibits discrimination in education, Title VII, which prohibits discrimination in employment. The difficulty, though, with relying for protection on statutes is that they can easily be modified by the Congress, and we've seen that over the years. There have been many efforts to amend Title IX to make it less protective, both by the Congress, and also there's been a lot of resistance in certain administrations to enforcing Title IX to give full protection against sex discrimination.
In education, Title IX is specifically about, and it's a very important one of the key protections against sex discrimination, and people could write books about how constantly the progressive community is having to fight off attacks to, as Linda said, to weaken Title IX. I mean, that's an excellent example of what we would not have to expend energy on if we had an Equal Rights Amendment.
Let me, I have a caller here that I want to get to, but again, for people who might have just tuned in, I would like to introduce, again, our guests. The last person you heard is Roberta Francis, someone who's been working on the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, and its ratification for a long time now. She, from 1999 until 2005, was the chair of the ERA Task Force of the National Council of Women's Organizations. Also joining us is Linda Wharton. She is Associate Professor of Political Science at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, where she teaches courses in constitutional law and women and the law. And questions are welcome. Questions, comments, welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have someone here calling in from Batavia. We'll go right there, our toll free line. Line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole discussion about sex discrimination, and I've seen, and I've got a friend of mine that is an attorney, and well, I know quite a few people in the law, attorneys and lawyers both, and it seems to me, no matter what you do to try and change the wording, they find a legal hole to get around it as far as getting a, you know, a criminal off when it comes to sex discrimination or a company, because that's what they pay the big lawyers and attorneys and whatnot for. The problem I see is, and this is going on for a long, long time now, There's a group of people out there that want to change the Constitution. They want to change it to modern times, and it's slowly but surely being chipped away to the point where, you know, I actually, because somebody else is offended by something, now I'm paying the price. You know, nobody asked me about my opinion. Nobody asked me anything about, you know, and now bringing, what does that got to do with sex discrimination is, what your form of sex discrimination is, for me, might be different for you. I mean, everybody interprets things differently.
Well,
and
the point about the Equal Rights Amendment is, I think Linda would agree, we're not chipping away at the Constitution. We're trying to fill in cracks that were there from the beginning in terms of having the coverage be across the board for all citizens, male or female. And in terms of my definition versus yours, we're talking with the ERA about legal sex discrimination, not the things that people raise, you know, then do men have to open doors for women, et cetera. These are not issues around the Equal Rights Amendment. But, in fact, what the Equal Rights Amendment would mean legally is how courts has first how the Congress would establish a legislative history for it in the course of passing it out to the states for ratification, and then how, when it's in the Constitution, how the courts would interpret it. So it's not an arbitrary thing any more than the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, et cetera, are arbitrary. They follow us. The ERA is not going to be more equal than the other amendments, but it will be interpreted based on what its sponsors say, or, you know, I mean, the Congress says it should mean, this is why we're passing it, and why how the courts interpret it.
Well, you know, and that's fine and dandy, but see, here's the problem, and I know this a couple of times by working in personnel department from my last job, that there are people, there are guys out there, and sometimes I wonder, depending, and I find this out in the corporate world a lot of times, if there's women out there that want to climb the corporate ladder, and they'll run over anybody, they're like a steamroller to get there.
Women?
Yeah, and I'm not picking on women. My wife's in the corporate world, and she's doing great. And, you know, I'm flexible. I don't, it's just like me and you know, I just, what I'm trying to get to here is that there are some things that I've known men get blamed for. If they look at a woman the wrong way, sexual discrimination comes out. If you, in other words, it's gotten to the point where there's this society today is made, it's kind of like the Democrats and the Republicans. It is so thick, you're afraid to say or do or anything in an office, an environment, without somebody jumping out and saying, boo, I'm going to sue you.
Well, whatever those examples are that you could give, I would suggest. Well, the examples you have like that, I would suggest you put up against the examples over the 220 some years of the Constitution of fights that women have had to carry on to begin to get treated equally. And, you know, we have nothing happens without some dynamic tension to it. But the Equal Rights Amendment and sexual harassment are, in essence, two different issues to be talking about. Sexual harassment already has prohibitions against it.
Yeah, I also just want to clarify that the Equal Rights Amendment would not address anything that occurs in a private employment context. It is a prohibition on governmental action. Anything that the government would do that would perpetuate sex-based discrimination. And the second thing I wanted to point out is, the Equal Rights Amendment is not something that is just protecting women. It is a prohibition on sex-based discrimination. If men are the victims of sex discrimination, they, too, are protected under the Equal Rights Amendment.
Good point.
I want to thank the caller and hope you wouldn't mind if I go on, because I have a couple of other people here locally holding. But before I do, though, let me ask you this question. As I mentioned at one point, there were 35 states that had ratified the ERA. Now, five later withdrew their ratifications, and there's questions about whether or not, you know, does that count or not. But so let's say at one point there were 35 states that ratified it. That's just three short of the number needed. And apparently there were also some states that did not ratify, in which at least one of the chambers of their legislature passed it. So this was actually it actually came pretty close. Although I suppose some people would say, you know, over 10 years, if you couldn't get it passed, then it's not going to pass no matter what.
Not to interrupt, but there were, if six votes had changed in three different states in 1982, it would be ratified.
Okay, so quite close. So, you know, having said that, I guess I'm interested in having both of you talk about why it is you think that it didn't pass. And how about Professor Wharton? You can go first, and then Ms. Francis.
I think Bobby might want to address this one first, and I can add some things, because she's really was actually involved in the initial campaign.
All right. Well, Ms. Francis, why do you think the ERA did not pass?
Well, the nebulous but I think very important answer is that it is going up, changing our law to say equality of rights exists on the basis of sex is countering not only the hundreds of years of implementing our Constitution, but cultural precedent that's both, or not, that is political, sociological, psychological, theological, etc. To say that women are equal to men is a big statement that takes a long time to get implemented into law. So that's the nebulous, as I say, but that's the tree, the forest, I should say. And some of the trees are that it is an economic issue. There were people opposing it on economic grounds. It would mean having to pay women equitably. There were people opposing it on, theological grounds. I mean, some churches came out very openly against it and worked against it. We were in a country where during the 1972 to 82 campaign, we were swinging from fairly progressive Jimmy Carter era through the 1980 election of Ronald Reagan, and the political right used the Equal Rights Amendment extremely deftly as an organizing tool. So they generated, all they needed to do was generate some doubt that this was a good thing, and they could raise money around it. They could influence legislators who don't want to get into controversial issues to vote against it in the states. It was caught in a revolving door of what was happening politically in this country.
Mm. I would also just add that there was also a campaign of what I would call misinformation about what the ERA would mean.
Yes.
You know, there was just a lot of rhetoric out there that, you know, was scary to people. For example, arguments that it would require single-sex bathrooms everywhere, and that it would force women into the military. Those kinds of arguments were put out there that, you know, I believe are just not true.
I can't resist, David, if you mm-hmm. want to take a minute now to talk about Illinois. You said there were some states where it passed one house, et
yes.
cetera. Illinois is a textbook example of how the ERA was used as a political football, because in the 70s, when your then House Speaker George Ryan was opposed to ERA, he led a movement to change the requirement in the House to need a 3/5 majority to ratify a federal amendment. No other state has it. Illinois, after the ERA deadline expired in 82, dropped it. They have reinstituted it in recent years because there has been a resurrection of the Equal Rights Amendment. States that haven't ratified are being asked to vote on it as part of what's called a three-state strategy, which is being explored to see if three more states would put it over the top. And people who are interested could go onto the website equalrightsamendment.org and read more about that. I won't go into detail. But in 2003, I wonder how many of your listeners know that in 2003, the Illinois House passed an ERA ratification bill by more than the 3/5 majority, which by then had been reinstated, unfortunately. I think you folks there might want to look at that again and figure out if you really want to be the only state in the union that requires more than a simple majority to ratify a federal amendment.
I that's a really good point, Bobby. I also want to put this in context and say, I mean, we're kind of talking about the earlier ERA campaign as kind of a failure, but I think we also just have to acknowledge that we came breathtakingly close, and our federal constitution is very difficult to amend. There have been, I believe the stat is over 11,000 amendments have been introduced in the Congress, but in over 200 years, there have been only 27 amendments to our Constitution. And 10 of those, as you know, came in 1793 as part of the Bill of Rights. So it is, unlike other countries and certain state constitutions, it's really tough to get our Constitution amended.
We have some other callers here, and I want to bring them into the conversation. Let's do that now. At least the first couple are here where we are. They're in Champaign, and we'll take them in the order that they came in, starting with line one. Hello. Caller there,
hi,
line one. Yes.
Going?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. I'd like to say I think the ERA amendment, it should be ratified and made part of the Constitution, and I think it's long overdue.
Thank you.
I think that there's some issues that some of the speakers raised that I'm concerned with, and that's the idea of same-sex schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that it's.
And I think we just lost the caller.
Well, could I pick up on that briefly?
Do that, because this is, I do know that indeed this is something that concerns people that believe that there are benefits to single-sex education, either schools that are all boys or all girls, and that there is some concern, I think, that if the ERA would pass, that then that would mean that they couldn't do that anymore.
Well, and Linda may want to amplify on this too, but in the latest Supreme Court decision that applies to this issue, it was about Virginia Military Institute, VMI, in the 90s, which did not admit women but used public funds. And the decision was written by Ruth Bader Ginsburg that, in fact, public funds could not be used for a purpose that benefited only one sex. And the fine print in that decision was there still could be single-sex entities set up, but only to remedy past discrimination, not to perpetuate past discrimination. And so I think, Linda, isn't that a fair way to state that single-sex entities are not outlawed completely, but they have to have the objective of doing away with the effects of past discrimination?
Yeah, I think that's right. And remember, no constitutional right is an absolute. The ERA would mean that the court would look very closely at single-sex public institutions and look to see, is there a really, really good reason for them? And single-sex public schools that are like VMI, based on stereotypes and average differences between men and women, would not be allowed. But you're correct that the Supreme Court has left the door open to the possibility of allowing single-sex public institutions if there's a really, really good reason. For example, they are compensating for some past historical discrimination, or they're not based on stereotypes.
And as an example of how it would benefit men, Linda, you could tell better maybe the Bakke decision. There was a case where a man wanted to be admitted to a nursing school in Mississippi and was prohibited because of his sex. This was some decades ago.
Yeah, that's...
And he was, you know...
University of Women versus Hogan.
Yeah, and the court said you can't keep him out just because he's the sex that stereotypically doesn't do nursing. So that's one example of how it would work to the benefit of all citizens.
Okay. Well, I hope that we've, in part, have addressed the question of the caller. He can certainly call back if he'd like to follow up. We'll go next to another Champaign caller. This is line two. Hello.
Yes. I also am someone who would like to see the Equal Rights Amendment be part of the Constitution, so just want to put my politics out there. I do have two questions, one about a recent case and then also a comment on the gentleman who called before. As I recall, I can't remember the name of the woman who worked for Goodyear, and she discovered
Lily, I believe.
That she had been being underpaid for exactly the same work as the men were doing, and she brought a case, I think it was the ACLU who did that, I can't remember, and went to the Supreme Court, and they had this loophole that said, you didn't bring it in a timely fashion, and, you know, so we're not going to allow this decision to stand. You don't have a legal leg to stand on. And would the Equal Rights Amendment do away with that kind of discrimination?
That case was brought under Title VII, the federal statute that prohibits sex discrimination in employment.
Mm-hmm.
That case that you're pointing to has been much criticized in the legal world.
I don't think the court found a loophole. I think they created one to say that she was too late to file.
And there was a very compelling dissent in that case by Justice Ginsburg. But the problem created by the court's interpretation of Title VII in that case is being remedied right now in the Congress by legislation.
Uh-huh.
They're going to fix Title VII so that ruling basically is wiped away.
Just a quick follow-up question. In the case of this woman, would that mean that she could file again, or it is too late for her?
You know, I don't know if the fix is going to apply retroactively or not. That will be a question of what the new legislation says, and I don't know the answer to that question.
It's an excellent question, and it's getting at what the ERA is about, which is fairness and simple justice. And the fact that even, Linda, maybe you'd agree or want to amplify, but the struggles, the cases that are brought case by case right now, even though they might create some more protection over time, they still might not, the women in most cases, or some men who are disadvantaged under current constitutional law, might never realize remedies, even if we get the ERA in the Constitution. As Linda says, it might not be retroactive, and so the sooner we get the ERA in there, the sooner everyone who is discriminated against on the basis of sex can get full remedy for that against that discrimination.
And there would be none of this, you didn't do it in a timely manner, and,
right,
and things of that sort. Okay. I personally intend to no longer buy from Goodyear, although I know that there is financial discrimination everywhere in employment against women. I wonder why you still choose to use the word sex instead of gender in the Equal Rights Amendment.
Well, I can give you an academic definition of the two, sex being your biological condition,
mm-hmm,
gender being the role you play related to things. But I won't, you know, it can get convoluted. But the point is that when Alice Paul, again, as David at the beginning gave such a good summary, ERA was written in 1923 by Alice Paul,
mm-hmm,
a New Jersey,
right,
lawyer who was one of the key suffrage leaders, woman suffrage leaders. She changed the wording in 1943 to the current wording, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. I feel like we can't repeat it too often because that's what it says. And that wording was what was ratified by 35 of the 50 states. And so in order to pursue the strategy that three more states might in fact be all that are needed, it absolutely would have to be that identical wording.
Right.
And secondly, Linda, I don't know if you have any legal interpretation of sex and gender treated differentially in laws, but the point is that no matter what biological sex you are,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't matter if you are biologically female and dress as male, biologically male and dress as female, whatever, that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about who you as a person, mm-hmm, at physically are.
I would like to comment on the previous caller. I know that in this community there has been a big push for charter schools, and I have heard the discussions about research that shows that young black males do better in a school for young black males rather than in a public school for various reasons, and that they have different learning styles. Actually, all children have different learning styles, but that they feel that locally a school for black children or specifically for black male children is a help in the school environment. And would the ERA amendment preclude that sort of thing? Now, I know that you just talked about that to redress past wrongs. I'm not sure that different learning styles would come under the coverage of that statement.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Yeah, redressing past wrongs is just one example. But, I mean, basically, as I was saying before, the ERA would mean that these schools would have to come forward and justify these schools that you're describing with some very, very good reasons.
Compelling.
They could not be based on stereotypes about learning styles. On the other hand, if there were good research. Scientific research,
right,
that backed up the claims, I think they could fly, you know, certainly under the current Constitution, you know, as it is written, and under the ERA. But it would have to be proven. It would put these schools' feet to the fire and say, look, there are times where we are going to allow this, but you really have to come in and prove it. And I think that's a really good thing. We want to be very careful when we are making race and gender or sex-based discrimination. So all it means is we're going to look really carefully at what's being done here. Does that answer your question?
Perfectly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think we also, not to get into the discussion of that issue more, but there is equally research that shows that it's not all that much of a benefit that they are separate. It does have to do more with teaching styles. And so you have to really, as Linda says, separate out very carefully what is feeding previous stereotypes, if you will, and what is trying to break them down.
We have about 10 minutes left. We have another caller we'll get right to, but again, for people who might have tuned in, I want to reintroduce our guests. Roberta Francis was, from 1999 until 2005, the chair of the ERA Task Force of the National Council of Women's Organizations. She also established and maintains a website with a lot of ERA information on it, so if you're interested, you go there. It's www.EqualRightsAmendment.org, or the three W's, www.EqualRightsAmendment.org. Also joining us is Linda Wharton. She is Associate Professor of Political Science at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, where she teaches, among other things, constitutional law and women and the law. And we're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment, and questions are welcome. We have another caller here who's been patiently waiting, and we'll go to them. This is someone in Urbana, and it's line 3. Hello.
Hi. First, I just wanted to say thank you for having this show, because I feel like gender issues are so off the radar screen, even among progressives. So I think it's great that you're having this show. I couldn't help but call in after hearing the first caller and just make an observation that I hope you guys can comment on. But I think part of the hesitation, I definitely support the Equal Rights Amendment, but it seems like part of the hesitation with gender equality in general, I think there really is in our society still an idea of how women and men are supposed to act and that they should be treated differently. His comment about women running over everybody to climb the corporate ladder, in my mind, the underlying comment is that's okay for men to do, but not women. And so I think there's still some of this insidious gender-related stereotypes that people think that that's okay. And I do think that this is where issues of race have really made more progress than gender, because I think most people realize that making racial comments is wrong, that kind of thing. Whereas with gender, I think there's still, you know, people think that that's okay. And I just also wanted to make a general comment that, and I think you guys were alluding to this earlier too, that men and women both would benefit from an Equal Rights Amendment. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw those comments out. If you could comment, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what I think. The gentleman didn't hear me when he said about women do this, and I said only women, but I think he missed your point is well taken. But I think we need to look at the Equal Rights Amendment in the context of, as you're also alluding to, the huge social changes that have gone on in the last several generations around male-female roles, relationships, abilities to do things in the public realm and the private realm. We have a lot more men doing more things in the family realm, which is wonderful. I mean, and talk about research. There's a lot of research that reinforces that marriage is equal marriages, in quotes, as opposed to, one partner being the dominant one, are more stable, longer lived, et cetera, et cetera. So you can get into a lot of documentation for why the Equal Rights Amendment would, in fact, be a great help socially. But your point is certainly well taken.
There's a subject I want to explore here, and let me turn to Professor Wharton, and then, of course, Ms. Ferenc, do you want to get in this too? But here is the question, and I know that this can get one into probably some fairly complicated debates and arguments, but here I go, and we can see if we can talk about this simply.
Okay.
As I said at the beginning, at one point, there were 35 states that ratified the ERA, and to ratify, you needed 38. So at one point, at least, it was three states short. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, if the ERA, and the deadline was once 1979, and then was extended, and then the deadline passed. If now, at this point, it was introduced again in the Congress, here's the question people are looking at. They would say, okay, now does that mean we have to start all the way over at the beginning again and go from state to state and have all the state legislatures vote as they did? Or do those 35 state votes to ratify somehow still stand? And so for that reason, and here's what we get to, what people are calling the three-state solution, mm-hmm. the three-state approach. Or if you could get another three states to ratify, would you be there? Now, and I know that there are people who argue this all kinds of ways. And then, of course, there's the question about what do you do with those five states that actually ratified and then withdrew their ratification? So then you're talking about, okay, are you talking about you need three more states, or do you actually need eight more states? Or do we start from the very beginning and you actually say, well, no, you need 38 states to do this all over again?
The answer, like so many things in the law, is unclear. And that's why as I think we mentioned earlier, the ERA is proceeding, along these two tracks. One is a total reintroduction that has been introduced by Congresswoman Maloney and Senator Kennedy, and the second one that has typically been introduced by Congressman Rob Andrews from New Jersey is a bill that would that basically would say we just need the additional three states because the others have already ratified. There is some precedent for Congressman Andrews' three-state approach, and that is in the Madison Amendment, which was originally relating to congressional pay raises.
Our latest amendment that we've added.
The 27th Amendment, which was originally proposed back in the late 1700s, I believe, and then was ultimately passed, I believe, in 92. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, many, many, many years passed until it was ultimately ratified. Some legal scholars have written that there is an analogy to that in the ERA, that we can proceed with just three more states ratifying, and that would be sufficient.
Yeah, in fact, Linda, I was going to cite that on the EqualRightsAmendment.org website. You can read summaries of the legal rationale for this three-state strategy. And Linda, I'm not even sure if I shared this with you, but the three young women who wrote that back in 1990s are practicing lawyers now, and I have asked one of them just within the last year the question that you just asked, David, about if it would pass Congress again, do the 35 have any viability for 35 ratifications? And another law student looked into it and said the bottom line is that the argument in support of using prior state ratifications is difficult but not impossible. And that goes to what Linda says, that it depends on how, you know, whether the Congress would accept them. The ultimate ratification, certification of an amendment, is done by the Secretary of State of the United States, I believe. Is that right, Linda?
I believe
that. And so Congress doesn't really have a role in it, except if there's a controversy, and clearly there would be a controversy about this.
Well,
the question is that it's possible they would count even under a newly passed ERA, but it depends on Congress.
Well, that even before you get to that question, it's got to pass Congress. And as I think I mentioned at the beginning, it's been reintroduced now in every session since 1982. What do you think the possibility that in this session of Congress that it would actually get it would get approved?
Well, I mentioned the political pendulum swinging to the right in 1980, and that's part of what sank it by that little bit. I think we're starting to see that pendulum slowly. Well, maybe not that slowly in the 2006 midterm elections, but, you know, the pendulum is now beginning to move in the progressive direction, and I believe that that will put wind under the wings of the Equal Rights Amendment. I also encourage, if I may do a little call for action in Illinois, Representative Lou Lang in your House has been the chief sponsor of the ERA ratification bill, and he's been tremendously good in working on it. He has not reintroduced an ERA bill in this session yet, but I did speak with his office, and the gentleman I talked to there said that it's possible that if there's enough support, it could be reintroduced in January. So I would just encourage people who are listening, if they care about the ERA, to do some organizing, if you will. Be in touch with Representative Lang's office to express your support. And there are a number of groups, the basic stalwarts, if you will, League of Women Voters, AAUW, Federation of Women's Clubs, BPW, and so on, that have done a lot of work on it in the last few years, last 5-10 years. So there's a way to hook into helping ERA advance in Illinois, and I hope people will take advantage of it.
All right. We just have a couple of minutes left. We have two callers. We'll try to get them both, but we're going to have to ask people to be brief. We'll go to Danville first, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me why certain amendments just say they're going to take effect on such and such a date, and why some amendments have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states?
The Constitution itself provides for the ratification process.
Yes.
By 2/3 of the Congress and by 3/4 of the states. That is written into the Constitution.
But not every amendment has to be ratified.
Every amendment to the U.S. Constitution must go through that same process. But the clause in the ERA that says will take effect 2 years after the date of ratification was to give states time to get their statutes into shape so that they would not be, there would not be so many unconstitutional statutes on the books.
Well,
so
that,
if you were referring
that
to that.
Sense, yes, for that. But I still reiterate that some of the amendments do not have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states.
I'm not sure what. Can you give an example?
The change of the presidential swearing-in date from March to January.
And that was not ratified? Or is that even an amendment, or is it a statute?
Of course it's an amendment.
Okay. But it did not need to be ratified by 3/4 of the states?
Well, it doesn't say so on my copies of the Constitution.
Well, we'd have to check into that. I would, Linda.
I've just wondered for a long time. This isn't specifically to the Equal Rights Amendment, but just to any amendment, and I've just wondered.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Sure.
All right. Well, we're just about at the point that we have to finish. Given the fact that now there have been advancements and improvements on the issue of equality, and that perhaps the whole conversation about women's rights doesn't perhaps have the same kind of urgency that maybe it did in the 1970s, one might be prompted to ask today, supposing that we did indeed have, again, a vote on ERA today, are you really confident that Ms. Francis is confident that it would pass?
It should. There are polls that say that 96% of people in the country think there should be equal rights. 88% of those think it should be in the Constitution. But 3/4 of those think it's already affirmed in the Constitution. That's our challenge, to let people know that it's not. And so when the opposition still, Phyllis Schlafly still, is putting out misinformation about it, and the attention span on news shows gets shorter and the yelling at each other gets louder, it's very difficult to get the truth out.
But it will happen.
It will definitely happen, but it's hard. It's a hard struggle still.
And what do you think about that, Professor Wharton?
I agree. I think things are changing. I think there's a lot more energy right now around the ERA. Whether it will happen in this Congress is unclear, but I feel very optimistic about the future. But I think it also takes, as Ms. Francis said, it's going to take a lot of advocacy to counter the misinformation.
Well, at that, we will have to stop. I do want to mention again, if you're interested in information about the Equal Rights Amendment, one place that you could go is the website that we've mentioned that was established and is maintained by one of our guests, Roberta Francis. That's www.equalrightsamendment.org. Roberta Francis, from 1999 until 2005, chaired the ERA Task Force of the National Council of Women's Organizations. Ms. Francis, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And our other guest is Linda Wharton. She is Associate Professor of Political Science at the Richard Stockton College of New Jersey, where, among other things, she teaches constitutional law and women and the law. And Professor Wharton, thank you.
Thank you very much for doing the show.